Good evening. Good morning. Thank you again for hanging in with me on Coast to Coast AM. I'll be back tomorrow night filling in for George Norrie, who's out on assignment. Whitley Strieber, Underground and Undersea Alien Bases. And are we at danger? We'll find out more from Whitley Strieber about that tomorrow. Tonight, we're talking with our guest, Russ Kellett. He is a researcher, a UFO enthusiast, an abductee, and he has supplied his information and research with author Stephen Lumley, who put it together in a comprehensive book called The Berwyn Mountains Incident Revealed. We'll discuss that book and the research of what could be the second most incredible alien contact in the UK outside of the Rendlesham Forest incident. This story very well could flesh out to be and turn out to be the British version of Roswell. History will tell. We'll talk a little bit more with our guest, Russ Kellett, and find out from Stephen Lumley what drew him to this case and why this case is so huge, but yet is still so little known about it in the world of ufology. We'll check in with all of that. Let's take our final break here, or our first break here, so we can get back and have a full chunk with our guests and delve into the story. Stay tuned. We got more Coast to Coast AM coming right after this. Good evening. Welcome back to Coast AM. The Berwyn Mountains Incident Revealed. Tonight, UFOs, that's our topic on Coast to Coast AM. Russ Kellett, our guest, was describing his experiences, his strange encounters of missing time and illnesses. And Russ, you said you're still dealing with this. You've now actually been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, correct?
That's right, yeah.
And you believe that this has something to do with what has been going on to you regarding alien contact?
I never had it before. I was quite fit. I used to do a lot of training. I never drank, never took drugs. And like I say, when all this lot started, then my problems began.
Now, you went in for physical checks, and you were looked at medically. And again, the one time you went in with the burns, all they did was give you a salve. Were you telling them about these breaks with consciousness where you were missing time and things would happen to you and you would have these experiences, or were you kind of keeping that to yourself?
I was told by a friend, you know, he wasn't into motorbikes, but he was a friend from around school time. And he said, you know, best thing to do is not say too much to your doctor about especially like you know, the wall turning black and the shadow of people coming through the wall and talking and communicating and, you know, sort of like remembering being in this military unit and remember being out, you know, sort of like with this group, you know, sort of like on operations and what have you. Said, I would skip all that and just talk about the headaches, dizziness, being sick. Obviously they can see weight loss for themselves, how you used to be, how you are now, you know. Like I said, the thing is, I was rushed into hospital anyway. I'd been taken in because I had memory loss. I was sat down and my memory just went on Sunday morning when I was talking to my dad, you know, sort of like reading the paper. This strange thing just came over me. And I just could not read the paper. I started mumbling, and my dad took me to hospital, and they kept me in for a week, and it was an isolation ward, and they couldn't figure out what it was. They could not really. They said it may have been something like a migraine attack. Right, yeah.
Was there any strange markings? Were there any of the implants that we've heard that surround alien contact and abduction scenarios? Anything like that you're finding strange markings that were not there before?
Not at first. And remember, I wasn't looking for any of this.
Right.
I wasn't looking for any of this because I'm a biker. I'm not, you know, my life had changed. I was purely about going out and living the life, and I was a biker. I wasn't interested, if you see what I mean. My life had changed.
Would these experiences ever happen to you, Russ, while you were driving in a regular automobile or public transit or anything, or was it only when you were on the motorbike?
Well, I didn't have a car license, so I was only ever on a motorbike then. But then I decided to take my test and, you know, get a car. This is like, you know, a few years later. I didn't go out that much. I decided not to go out on my motorbike. I sold my motorbike because I was scared, if you see what I mean. I stopped going out. I wasn't well, you know, sort of like, and I started doing a lot of artwork. I stayed in and I used to draw and paint and that type of thing because I wasn't well. I didn't go out.
Russ, and let me just throw this at you. I mean, again, I'm not a doctor. I didn't go to school for psychiatry, psychology, any of that. I know through listening to some of the stories, is I've had friends that are motorcycle enthusiasts here in the United States that have had similar situations while riding their bike where they would phase out and literally not remember any part of the ride or getting to where they were going. And I know that there's there's syndromes for that, people that will have these experiences where it's kind of like you're running on autopilot. There's also, just in reading, dissociation is a common experience of people with borderline personality disorder. When your friend was telling you, oh, you don't want to talk about these situations and what you're witnessing and seeing, I worry about that for you or for any of the listeners, because sometimes those are the keys that can help the doctors unlock, you know, the mystery of what might be going on. Because reading about dissociation and borderline personality disorder, the key point is, do you sometimes feel as if you've been zoned out? Do you have times when you feel unreal or when things around you look strange and unfamiliar? Do you sometimes lose periods of time or have chunks of the day that you do not remember? Do these experiences usually happen when you're under a lot of pressure? And according to the American Psychiatric Association, it defines dissociation as disruption of the usually integrated functions of consciousness, memory, identity, and perception of the environment. So I just, for listeners, my concern for them is that nobody wants to feel as though they're mad or that they might be going through a psychotic break. But certainly if you're dealing with situations like Russ Kellett, and you have these moments where you're losing time, you're seeing things, certainly, because we're afraid that we might be looked at as though we're crazy, we're reluctant to say these things. But sometimes these exact points should be brought up, because this may be able to give the doctors a better perception of what you're dealing with overall. And I only bring that up, Russ, again, not calling you into question or your integrity or situation, but reading, there are psychological situations that seem to fit your parameters exactly. And I was wondering, after going through the medical exams and such, has that ever been looked at? I mean, have you had anybody, especially because things were getting worse for you, did they ever look at a personality disorder or dissociation as any kind of contributing factor to your situation? Or did you always just keep that information back enough that doctors still don't really know that you were having those visions and believe that you were in those places?
Well, like I say, I was told by a friend not to say anything, and at that time I didn't. But because of things, you know, sort of like got worse, you know, sort of like losing weight, you know, so much and what have you, it was like telltale sign something is wrong. It's not just like, you know, like you just described. You don't usually have weight loss or anything like that. You don't get burns with that. You know what I mean? That is something that usually affects your mind only. You know what I mean? When you start.
Well, with burns, though, and you know this because you've been biking long enough, sometimes if the temperature is right, the wind is right, and you can get a wind burn that's just as nasty as any kind of sunburn you'll ever get.
Oh, hell yeah, but not after the summer. You know what I mean? Not after the summer. And remember, we live in England, you know, sort of like you might get 4 weeks of sun and then that's it, you know, sort of like you're not going to get windburn sort of like after the summer's gone. In fact, you're not going to get it in the summer over here, full stop.
Well, I don't know. I live in Minnesota, Russ, and I tell you, in the middle of winter, you can get a nasty wind burn out here, and there doesn't have to be a sun present at all. But I get where you're going with that. I understand. Like I said, I wanted to ask the question that I know many of the listeners will be curious about as well, as if that is out there. But I do recommend for the Coast listeners, if you're having moments like this, don't be afraid to talk to your doctor about it, because it can help you maybe get a better handle. Maybe there's a way that answers can be provided for you. I know you've got a little bit more of the story to tell as well, Russ, so please finish up with that, and then we'll bring Stephen in and start talking about the book.
The thing is, I did speak to the doctor later on and told him, and he just says, oh, really, you know, sort of like... So what I started doing is, I because of my friend talking to me, telling me about, you know, there could be a UFO connection, and I've read this book and what have you, I started to read a little bit. I started to go out with my video camera, and lo and behold, I started to film UFOs around me. I started to film them in close proximity, and one time in the next door neighbor's garden, when there were a police helicopter about, I'm filming the police helicopter, and I noticed that there's this ball light, the same type of ball light that was flying at the side of me on the way home on the night when I got the sunburn. So, you know, these things are around me, and then more and more. So I started going out more and more with the camera and started to film these UFOs or these flying objects, these craft. I filmed them around me, you know, sort of like I filmed them coming out of the sea and changing into triangles and taking off just outside where I live here at the bay. I've filmed like dolphins in the sky, and again, what I did, because
now, do you have that footage? Is that footage on your website as well?
No, because last time I started to put footage on, I had somebody trying to take it and then try to sell it as their own. So I learned a while back not, you know, to do anything like this. The other thing, I do get a lot of documentary makers coming over here and wanting to see the footage, if you see what I mean.
Right. Have you ever thought of putting together the evidence you've collected and copywriting it and selling your own DVD so that you've got the history up there, people can see the physical proof? Because, I mean, that seems pretty amazing. If you've got that ability to film and it's around you so much, that would be a great opportunity for other experiencers like yourself around the world that feel alienated and alone, and that maybe they are having these problems or maybe mental breaks, to see that this isn't just a mental issue. This, you've got physical evidence.
You'll get that. Oh well, it could be lighting. It could be a camera. You know, you get all these sort of, so I don't bother anymore. I've been filming a UFO when it actually shoots down five balls of light, and you can see it coming down and hitting me, and sort of like I actually give the camera to my friend to have a look, and I, when this is happening, I say, give us a camera, and I start filming again, and as I'm moving the camera across, you can see these things coming down and hitting me, right, yeah, you know, sort of like, and again, you get people, oh, well, it could be this, it could be that, and well, you know, we're filming a UFO in the first place. And isn't it strange how these things come down? You can see it's coming from the UFO, you know. Then I'm filming something for 18 minutes in the sea, right, in the sea, that is, only 50 foot away from the side of the wall where the sidewalk is, right, yeah. And these two things basically take off, no sound, and you can see some kind of two flying triangles together. You know what I mean? I actually got somebody who was part of the Expert Witness Association to look at all my footage and to appraise it, right, yeah, and could not say what the things, they could tell you what they're not. They're not aircraft, they're not this, they're not that, but could never tell you what they are, you know. So, I mean, I know what they are. I filmed them. So, you know, sort of like, I don't need anybody else to tell me, you know what I mean, and to sort of like... start saying, oh, well, have you thought it could be this? I know what they are. So, you know, for my own personal, you know, sort of like, satisfaction, I know what I filmed, and, sort of, it's there.
All right.
Quite a number of videos.
Well, you've got, now we're going to talk about the case that's covered in the book, the research. What brought you to this case, the Berwyn Mountains incident? How did this come around? Now, Rendlesham Forest, we've all heard about. Certainly, they've covered it on Coast to Coast AM. This case seems so intriguing, the Berwyn Mountains incident, because it's not just contained to the mountains, but a battle from ocean to sky to the, you know, remnants and crash remains of a possible UFO. Why is there not more information out there about this case?
To be quite honest, it's like anything else. You know, sometimes certain magazines have pushed certain incidents more than others. I mean, I can remember, you know, going back 15, 20 years ago, there was two main stories, and you would think that that was it for ufology. You know, you would think that that was the be-all and end-all with Roswell and Rendlesham.
Right.
Right, yeah? And, you know, I got where I was sick about reading, you know, sort of like, you know, every other magazine, and it was every few months, it'd just be rejigged again, and, you know, and so, I mean, that went on for quite a few years. So, you know.
All right, well, briefly, we've got
a
couple
start?
Minutes. Well, yeah, why this story? How did this come to your attention, and why did you want to turn the focus on this one?
Because of obviously, my interest and what had happened to me, I started looking for answers, and I set up a group, and people were contacting me, and I became friends with a gentleman who lived in North Wales, around this area, and we had a lot in common, you know, as well as this subject, but other things, you know, military and what have you, you know, sort of like shooting, all sorts of different things. And I met up with him, and he'd been at a dinner talking to somebody, and they told him, he said, oh, you know, I'm surprised there's a lot of UFOs sightings around here, and I've been seeing some things. And a chap told him, oh, I could tell you a real story, you know, what happened to friends of mine. So he told him what happened. And then he told me, he said, you know, this is a real story, is this, you know. So I went over and, you know, sort of like met my friend, and he'd arranged to speak to these gentlemen who had a tale to tell. Five gentlemen who, on the way home from a meeting, you know, came across this craft at the side of the road. But that was just the beginning. I was giving documentation. I was given maps, which I've got here. I've got all these maps here from these men had researched and looked what happened on that night. And then I started making my own inquiries and writing off. And I have a timeline here, what happened on the night through official documents, you know, through police, the actual phone calls, etc., you know, so I wrote off for other documents as well, and found some amazing things that had actually happened on that night, you know,
We'll take our break. We'll come back. We'll be joined by Stephen Lumley, who is the author. He is the freelance journalist with extensive experience working on national newspapers and magazines. He collaborated with Russ Kellett, our guest, who is, again, a UFO abductee, a researcher of UFOs for the past 20 years, and has been involved in many major investigations throughout the years. He is sharing his story. We're going to find out more about the Berwyn Mountains incident, and we'll find out what's been revealed. This could be one of the most groundbreaking UFO cases in history. Stay tuned as the story unspools for us right here on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you for joining me this evening. I'll be back tomorrow night with my special guest, Whitley Strieber. We're going to be discussing underground and underwater alien bases. Whitley believes he's been abducted and has been dealing with this for a majority of his life. We'll find out what he knows about this and what we should fear. Is there a real danger arising? We'll talk with Whitley Strieber about that tomorrow. And remember, you never have to miss another episode of Coast to Coast AM. All you need to do is become an insider, a Coast Insider. It's so simple, so easy to do. Sign up. You get over 5 years of past archives so you can tune in and check out all of the shows. You also get instant access to news. There are live chats with the hosts and with many of the different guests from Coast to Coast AM. You can get all the information by going to coasttocoastam.com. Again, check that out at coasttocoastam.com. Become an insider today and know what so many people around the world are enjoying on a daily basis. Again, that's unbelievable, unprecedented opportunity to hear past episodes, great stories, amazing guests, all right at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Stephen Lumley joins us, and we start to find out about the story of the Berwyn Mountains incident revealed. UFOs, that's our topic tonight, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Stephen Lumley joins us now. He's a freelance journalist with extensive experience of working for national newspapers and magazines. He has also ghostwritten many biographies. His book, The Berwyn Mountains Incident Revealed, is his first commercially published book. He has several more planned, each tackling a number of issues surrounding the subject of UFOs and the paranormal. Thank you very much for joining us, Stephen. We appreciate you coming in this evening.
Pleasure to be here, Dave.
UFOs, why this topic? Why is this something that appealed to you as a journalist?
Well, my interest in UFOs and the paranormal goes back to childhood. I mean, probably like yourself and like Russ, it goes back to the 1970s. And when I became a journalist, whenever I was on whichever newspaper I worked on, I was like the go-to man for UFO stories because it's such a strong interest for me. And over the years, I've interviewed and met lots of UFO investigators and people who have had really interesting experiences.
Now, do you stand on the line of, as a journalist, you don't take one side or the other on this, or do you firmly believe in UFOs and write the stories in the way of, you know, here's the information, this is what I believe is going on? How do you differentiate and how do you weed through the real stories and so much of the disinformation that's being cycled out there?
Well, that is a really interesting question because I do believe in UFOs, but I'm probably one of the biggest skeptics around. So when people come to me with an interesting UFO story, I don't accept it on face value. And then you have to look at various aspects of it and see where the evidence lies, where the evidence takes you, and whether they're a trustworthy witness as well. But I think as well that there's a lot of misinformation going on, and that's particularly true about the Berwyn Mountains incident. So I think my background and my experience is really to question everything.
All right, this case, how did this one specifically come to you, and how were you connected with Russ?
Right, well, I've done a couple of stories about Russ for national newspapers, and I was in his office one time going through his video footage, some of which is absolutely incredible. Now, he referred to it in an earlier segment, but it's he's got some really, really interesting footage of UFOs, and that the footage he says of when the things came down to attack him, that's just fascinating. And on his wall is a map of North Wales. Now, this map has tracks of RAF jet fighters and helicopters and UFOs. So being a journalist and quite nosy, I asked him what that was about, and he explained about the Berwyn Mountains incident. And to be honest, I hadn't heard of it until that moment.
All right, so he starts to tell you this story. I'm sure you're, you know, trying to pick through him and get the information out on this. Was he real forthcoming with it, or was it something that he was guarded and protected about sharing at that point?
No, the one thing about Russ is he's absolutely open about A, his own experiences, and B, cases that he has researched. And when we got talking about this, I just thought it was an incredible story that five professional men had witnessed a UFO coming down and beings being recovered from it. And when I looked into it separately, I mean, you've said yourself, there isn't that much information about this particular incident. And people are focused on a different part of the story, which is it's just phenomenal for me.
All right, so you start to hear the story, you start doing your own research in on this, and it starts coming together. And it, as you said, it's hard because there's not a lot of readily available information out there, and especially from credible sources, to put together a book and to go forward with this. I mean, you've got Russ in your pocket, and he's got quite a bit of information. How hard is it, especially 40 years later, to get reliable testimony, reliable eyewitnesses, and reliable records to flesh this story out to the point where you really believe that this case took place?
Well, there are a couple of things. Firstly, it's happened more than 40 years ago, and people are still talking about it, so it's still fresh in the memories of people in North Wales. And secondly, what's unusual about this is that the British Geological Survey, who actually monitor things like earthquakes and things like that, they have boxes and boxes of paper records, which I went to Edinburgh and searched through to actually put together quite a large chunk of the story, which reinforces what Russ was trying to say had actually happened.
Russ, was it exciting for you that here you've got Stephen, a seasoned journalist, looking into this, and he begins uncovering even more documented proof of this case and things that maybe you didn't even know about?
When he was up in Edinburgh, he actually phoned us to tell me something. And he said, "You will not believe what I have found." And it was information that was needed. And he said, "I'll tell you when I get back." You know, it was just amazing, some of the new information, what he'd found.
And were you surprised, Russ, that after all this time, and especially 1974, this wasn't the time of, you know, fantastic record keeping. There wasn't a paper trail like there is today with electronic filing and memos, and everybody's got it. Were you surprised that he was able to dig up the amount of information he was?
No, because of course there's a paper trail. There's more paper trail than anything, you know. And the other thing you've got to remember is I was looking at these areas on the map and looking at the names on the constabulary major incident logs, which I've got all of them from the night, right, yeah? So I'm looking at the people's names, right, and where they're from and what village. So then I get the 192 disc, and I start ringing round and talking to the people, right, yeah? This is like, you know, sort of like 10 years ago, etc., and even up to sort of like the last couple of years, talking to the people that are in these records, right, yeah? And you know what they was doing? They were saying, "Oh, yeah, well, you really need to speak to me son, my husband that actually saw that. I'll give you my son's telephone number." So they're all talking and passing on information, and they remember it well, and it's all documented in the police logs. The major incident log, I should say. Right, yeah? So we've got pages and pages and pages of these. So you can forget there's no paper trail, my friend, because there is.
All right, Stephen, walk us through this now. This case doesn't just take place on the mound. This is something that the story is so intertwined and so bizarre, starting with them kind of casing the RAF a flotilla out there trying to figure out if there is something under the water, if there might be craft. And they were doing it in a very bizarre way, something that was totally new to me until I read this book. Talk to us a little bit about what was going on and how this story began before it got to the Berwyn Mountains.
Essentially, the five men who were the witness to a UFO coming down worked their way backwards to see where this thing had actually come from. And eventually, their story takes them to the Irish Sea. Now, what they were saying is that there was a flotilla of Royal Navy ships working their way down from Scotland past places like Liverpool and the Isle of Man towards North Wales. And along the way, they were using photo flash bombs. Now, photo flash illustrates everything underneath it if it's dropped in the sea or land. So, but they're very, very dangerous things to be using. So basically, as they got to North Wales, they found what they were looking for. Now, this is quite a difficult thing to put together. So the official record does say that the Coast Guard were informed that there was a photo flash exercise taking place that night. Now, I think Russ has done some really, really good work on this, and perhaps he could take it up from there.
All right, Russ, walk us through this then. This photo flash exercise is going on. This relatively dangerous deal, and as I understand, when they release these photo flash bombs, it basically lights up underneath the water so that you can see from the top to the bottom of the ocean. If you're over it and you're able to see down, you're able to see if there's anything that's hidden down there, going down almost to the ocean floor and the ocean bed. What is that's so unique about this?
Well, obviously, what these guys had said was that they had minesweepers, and they were dropping depth charges down, and there was aircraft basically flying over, and basically when the photo flashes was released and let off, the could tell if there's anything, you know, submerged, and they could give the locations to the actual the battleships and to the minesweepers, right? Yeah? So they knew exactly where to drop these. So in essence, what they were doing, it was backing these submerged objects into a corner and surrounded them, and there was only one way that they could come out, and that was out of the sea.
Now, is there any indication to why they believed that this would be a hotbed, this area along the ocean, along the sea, would be where the UFOs would possibly be located?
Yeah, well, I had some privileged information given. I was told, you know, like, look, we're not going to write this down, but there's been things going on for some time now, and the military have got to sort this out. It is actually, if you have a look, there has been quite a number of incidents around this area. In fact, we are now at a point where we've got documentation about another crash or crashes, right, yeah? So it was basically because this area is very significant, very significant. Obviously, these things, you know, are actually submerged, so they can come in and out of the sea. And it was thought that there was an underground base. And I think that these craft were trying to head for that underground base, but had difficulties because it looked like one of them for definite had been hit. Right, yeah. One of them came out around the Anglesey, and one came out around Puffin Island. There were more than one craft that came out of the sea, out of the Irish Sea, that night.
And with these flash bombs, I mean, was that enough then? Those are what sent these three craft rocketing out of the water because they had been found and spotted?
That's right, yeah. The minesweepers are depth charged, and it was the minesweepers depth charging that had actually brought them out, because they'd been hit.
Now, so, let me ask you, Stephen, as a journalist, and just looking at the logic of the situation, you've got craft that may have traversed universes or parallel dimensions or something that are hiding under our water base. They're going along, this flotilla is going along the ocean and sending off these charges. Don't you think that would alert these UFOs so that they would get the hell out of that area? You know, I mean, sea life would be smart enough to start to avoid that area. Why do you think the aliens or the UFOs would stay there knowing that these charges are being blown off coming towards them?
I think initially they weren't aware of what was coming. I think as the danger became apparent, they started moving closer to the North Wales coastline. And at some point, I think when they leave the sea, there's some sort of emergency call goes out, because all across England, and even the National Archive has a record of this, there are we believe there's dozens of UFO sightings across England that night, and it's after that incident takes place.
So it's after these charges are going off, after these UFOs begin to rocket out of the water. One is damaged, as I'm understanding, from one of these charges, correct?
Well, possibly. It was certainly later on in the story that there's an encounter with the RAF, and if it wasn't damaged when it met the RAF, it was certainly damaged afterwards. Well, there's an interesting point about the flotilla as it comes down, and they're dropping these photo flash bombs, is that there may have been a US Navy ship with them. And as Russ will explain in a second, NASA, we believe NASA was there as well.
All right, walk me through that, Russ. Why is NASA a part of this? Why is the American government involved in this? Do you believe that it was their intelligence, or do you believe that it was the intelligence from the Royal Air Force, the British command, that was letting them know that we think we've pinpointed this area?
Well, obviously, the links between America and this country have been great, far greater than what people would ever imagine. Mm-hmm. I would say that, England couldn't breathe without the American government telling it to. These gentlemen were no mugs. These were all seasoned people that had been in the Second World War, apart from one, right? Yeah. Now, what they said in their statement was that there was scientists and there was a crate that said NASA on board one of the battle ships, right? Yeah, that's written down. That's what it says. Also, you see, Steve sticks to facts. Right, yeah. I told him something, which the gentleman told me. They give me this statement, and I was told, and I told Stephen at the time, I says that they said there was something about this paper, what they'd written the statement on, something about the paper. And I just thought, right, so, and it's just like any normal paper with lines on, etc., could have come from some kind of office, right, yeah. I got a letter back from NASA. Now, strangely enough, this is unbelievable. Stephen saw it, and I said, what do you think to this? It had the same paper that had come from NASA, right, yeah? The only difference was that this paper had been cut down into about 4 inches by 4 inches, right, yeah, with a letter, because I'd wrote off to them asking one or two questions about that night. And I've got a piece of metal given as well. I've got maps given. I've got a piece of aircraft, what was supposed to have been blown out of the sky.
And you got this from the five men. You didn't get this from NASA.
No. Say that again. What didn't I get from NASA?
Well, you had said that you'd written to NASA, and then all of a sudden you started to mention that you got the piece of metal and the piece of aircraft.
I'm going a bit faster here. I've got the letter. Which was this 4x4 piece of paper, which was the same paper what these gentlemen had given me, right, yeah? It looked identical, right, yeah? And I thought that was bizarre. But what I'm trying to say is, I've got a lot more things as well, like there's a piece of craft, there's a piece from an engine, what I've got here, from a blade, from the Pegasus engine, all sorts of things that I was given from this group of men.
All right, we have to take a break, top of the hour. Our guests this evening, Stephen Lumley, Russ Kellett. The book we're discussing this evening is out and available, The Berwyn Mountains Incident Revealed. We'll find out how these pieces came together. Why would they pick Russ Kellett to share this information? How does this story develop, and what are the other amazing incidents? We've got that story and so much more to tell right here on Coast to Coast AM.